What's going on, everyone? Welcome back. Episode 86 of More Wrestling's podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Morrison, and this is a long overdue episode with especially this guest. I'm bringing on Joe Ussolini of Kirby Training Center. He's the head coach of the men's Greco team in Fargo, and he's the owner of the Kirby Training Center in the Albany area. So, yeah, Joe, we are, between camps at the Kirby Training Center, preparing Team New York for Fargo. Just finished up week one of the camp. How did week one go? That was June 26th through the 29th.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Aside from we had 12 to 14 practices for some of these guys. We opened up Sunday night. First camp was 6 a.m. Monday morning, and there's like an infamous hill that they run. It's called the Middleburg Mountain. If you've seen the movie Hustle, it's like that straight up hill that Adam Sandler has the guy run up. And so these guys do that on Mondays, three times up, three times down. And it's the kickoff to a very intense training camp to get these guys prepared. We want to make sure that the camp's harder than Fargo itself, but that we also give them a chance to recharge each week. So they're all home right now. Almost everybody's coming back Sunday night for round two.
Perfect. Yeah, round two, July 3rd through July 6th. So that's exciting. I mean, I saw the video of the kids running the stairs in Troy. So I thought that was, that's awesome. So, yeah, glad to see these guys preparing for Fargo. We're just 12 days away from checking into Fargo for Girls Freestyle Championships. What year of this is for Fargo? Is this as a coach for you? And I mean, how many times have you wrestled there as well? So I guess a total amount of times going to Fargo.
Been to Fargo. I wrestled 2 years at Fargo. And as a coach, I think 2015, it's almost 10 years since I've been a coach. When I was a kid, my dad, he was like, "You're not ready yet." He gave me that speech, "You're not ready." I qualified four, five different times, actually. I qualified three times as a junior, twice as a cadet. And there was a, "Hey, you didn't win states. You took second, so we're not going to go." And, while I understand that, I think that, as I got to the senior level and kept wrestling at the big dance, I only got more comfortable and more feeling like I belong with the best wrestlers. And then I stopped fearing anybody. And so, for these guys, we if they qualify, we encourage them to get their feet wet right away, so that they can set the goals accordingly for the future years. I think you qualify, you go. You don't know if the opportunity is going to be there next year. You don't know if there's a COVID. You don't know if there's an injury. This is one of the best experiences there is outside of World Team Trials. But this is an actual experience. It's not just a tournament. This is, for most people that I've ever wrestled with or coached, this is their favorite tournament of the year.
Yeah, it's Fargo's a very special event. I mean, you're out there for 7 to 10 days. I mean, depending on who you are and what you are doing out there, if you're wrestling one style or two or whatever. But it's a fun event, and I'm glad to be going back this year. But let's take a step back and talk about the Kirby Training Center. For those that don't know, Joe is the owner of the Kirby Training Center, which is in Troy, New York. Talk about the background and the fruition of this club and the late Jay Kirby.
Yeah, so when I moved home from Northern Michigan, I was a graduate at Northern Michigan. Jay Kirby was my roommate, along with Chaney Hayde, who's now the developmental coach out at the Olympic Training Center. And I came home and I was helping out Van Fraunhofer. We were running this club called Fraunhofer Wrestling. Fraunhofer is a very big name in Section 2 in New York State. Van was an Olympic alternate. Carl right now is out with Beat the Streets of Los Angeles. He's a NCAA finalist. And so we had this club, and Van has a family, and time started becoming limited. And I had all the time in the world, and I really love coaching. And we got the call that Jake passed. I was at my sister's house, and that was a really rough time. He's my best friend. He's a great guy, great wrestler. He was number one on the Olympic ladder at the time of his passing, but he was he was one of those like Rudy Rudigers. You know, when I walked on at Northern Michigan, he was, I think he was a scholarship athlete, but we took a lot of bruises our first year. And he, every year he got better and better until he was, you know, the number one ranked guy in the country. And we used to watch the movie Rudy together all the time. And, you know, basically it was my real, you know, real life, you know, teammate that, you know, kind of inspired me. That was my fourth school, and being his roommate, he just like kind of changed how I looked at life. I found out he had leukemia, in high school, during our first semester. And he also had epilepsy. He didn't tell me either of those things. I found out when he had an epileptic seizure, in the first semester. And then I got to understand what he needs to do in order to live every day with, take, you know, 20, 30, you know, pills every day. And so, you know, once he passed, I wanted to keep his name going forward. I talked to Van Fraunhofer about just switching the name to Kirby. And it was a no brainer. He was amazing. He was helping me coach when he could. And I felt inspired that the way I run the club, that I have to do it in a way that like always keeps, you know, Jay Kirby's memory in a great, great light.
How many years has this been since it's been the Kirby Training Center?
It's been Kirby Training Center since 2014.
Okay, so, you know, almost 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, and it was Fraunhofer Wrestling, I think, 2-3 years before that. So I've been coaching a lot since, like, 2009, 2010.
You know, so this facility, like, obviously on Twitter, people talk highly of this facility, seeing the videos, you know, the amount of mats that are there, the supless, you know, throwing dummies and the bags, and of course that ring that, you know, I just saw Cam Gronke and Ryan Brown throwing each other on. So, I mean, that's awesome too. But what was your biggest growth year, you know, since you started Kirby Training Center in 2014? You know, what was been your biggest growth year with wrestlers? I mean, and how many wrestlers do you have attending your club?
I think exponentially it was always the biggest in the beginning, because, you know, we start with 20 kids and then you're doubling, and it's like, wow. You know, in the last couple years, it's been steady at a room rate where we get, like, you know, we can get up to 100 kids in a practice, but we average probably about 60 a practice all the way, still right through this time. So I think we have about 200 members. Our youth memberships has grown. That's probably the biggest growth this year. There's influential figures in this room that help. It's not really, we don't recruit. I've been told to recruit by my previous coach. Call the best wrestlers, get them in here. But we don't call athletes. Everybody in here has either had a word of mouth or, you know, they've come in, they've started as a kid. And so, like, people like Kevin Parker was a huge plus for us. I was the best friend with his brother in high school. When he started coming here, other people are like, well, let me check that place out. That was a huge help. Coach Servidon, a lot of the coaches, wrestlers from Columbia. He's a big influencer in the area. But, you know, I'll say, like, Angie Dills of the world, the Zoe Gresses of the world, the Emily Frost of the world, the Reagan Rattel. Like, same thing with what's Altimers, the Bobby Treshocks. These kids carry themselves very well around the community in section two. They're great to other kids in the section. They're very friendly. They're very easy to talk to. And I give a lot of credit to them for creating a community that makes kids want to try it out.
Yeah. I mean, those names that you just mentioned are great faces of the sport. And, you know, being around them in Fargo last year, it's great to have them as, you know, the face of Kirby Training Center. And, you know, like we mentioned, this is the 10th year, and some of these guys and girls have wrestled since they were younger. You know, what's it been like coaching some of these wrestlers, you know, in their youth now, and then now seeing them wrestle in the, you know, the senior level? You know, Altimer obviously has gone on to Northern Michigan. Charles Welcome's there. Treshock. You know, just the list of wrestlers that are going on to wrestle in college and at the senior level. What's it been like to see them kind of start from, you know, being young at Kirby Training Center to now where they are currently?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll say from the youth level, because Charlie Dill started middle school, high school. Charlie, welcome. Same thing. Bobby and like Darian and Sonia, who Darian's just all around, like all sport athletes, unbelievable. Kind of figuring out what they wanted out of the sport and to help them get there. You know, when the guys told me they wanted to wrestle in college, I made sure that you prepare them for college, but you don't burn them out, because I believe, I do believe in, and it's not about, it's about professionalism. If you worked a job for 10 years, you're kind of likely to leave it. If it's not a job and it's a sport, you're probably never going to leave it. Right. And so, we like to deliver them to college, kind of having a preparedness to wrestle in college, but also like the energy to like, oh my God, I'm going to get so much better. Coach said I was going to, like, Charlie Dill is unrecognizable from 2 years ago. Bobby Treshock gave Pat Smith a heck of a go in his first senior tournament at the US Open. They were 6-4 in the quarters. You know, he's walking around like, I can compete here, you know, and that they're very good college students. They're giving their coach respect. They're not burnt out. They're excited to learn. So, yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to balance. Do I get it all out of them in high school? That'll probably look better on the club. Or do we get them to college in love so that they can be the very best wrestler as an adult? And I think looking, you know, 10, 20 years down the road when they have family and kids, I think that's the answer. Hey, that coach created an experience where I got the best out of myself. That's the goal. That's the mission statement. So right now it's an ongoing story. We don't know.
That's great though, because I mean, like looking back, like you don't want them to be burnt out, because then they will have negative a look at, you know, the sport of wrestling. You know, there's somebody that I know that probably was a little burnout when he was younger. And, you know, now that he's older, I mean, looking at the sport, you know, his kid's not old enough to wrestle yet, but I mean, from what I've heard of him speaking with the sport, he's just, you know, he doesn't, you know, appreciate the sport too much. But again, I think it was just a little bit burnout, which hopefully that changes down the road. But, you know, that's obviously the right thing. You don't want those kids to be burnt out. You want them to, you know, send their kids to Kirby, you know, when they have kids. So that's, yeah, that's big. But it's just another thing is you make the sport fun. You know, a lot of people say wrestling is an art. You know, I watch the videos that you post, whether it's YouTube or Instagram, Facebook, but, you know, it's like a dance class. You know, explain how you make it easier for the kids to understand, you know, breaking it down into, you know, pretty much dance moves, right? You got the music on and you seem to be stepping with the music and, you know, popping the hips and all that stuff. So, you know, how do you, make it easier through dance?
So there's steps, and it was coached to us, you know, in different ways. I had Yvonne Ivanoff as a coach, and I had Joe DiMio as a coach. They're not the same coaches, but they talked in steps, and the least amount of steps to hit a move means the least amount of time to defend a move. Right. And so that means you're planning ahead, which means you're an excellent dancer. And yeah, we do. We absolutely treat it like a dance. And as a partner, you know, if you're actually taking any real dance class, I've taken some in my, not many, but I've taken some, and without your partner working with you, you can't do it. And so the looks, if you're trying to drill a move, the looks have to be where you need them to be, or else your drill won't work. And so we play with the movement. We put some music to it. We want them to get in a rhythm. We don't want them so stiff. And then we try to make the moves fun to learn. Listen, Greco-Roman is one of the styles that I love the most, but I love all three. And when I'm teaching Greco-Roman, a lot of kids and their parents, more so the parents, are scared from what they've heard about Greco-Roman, that I know that I'm in an uphill battle on getting them sold. Now, I know how to sell Greco-Roman wrestling, so I'm not really worried about it. But I understand that you have to make it fun to fall, to forward roll. You have to make it fun to throw. You have the crash pad. That's a huge investment. That arena is a very important investment. The dummies, you know, because if you throw somebody wrong, you'll never have that partner again. Mm-hmm. Investing in those tools is a necessity. It's not a luxury that I've done. I have to do this if I want to grow the sport of Greco-Roman. Nobody wants to hear Greco-Roman supporters complain. Greco doesn't get the love. We don't deserve the love, right? You got to earn the love. And so we have to put these things together that maybe people go, oh my God, I love Greco-Roman wrestling. You know, and that's kind of what we do with Headlocks on the Hudson. I mean, that's the same type of deal. So, you know, we're just give them every avenue to succeed, but we still let them choose. You know, some kids still like freestyle. Some people still like folk style the most. And some like football the most. And then we use wrestling to help them with their football tackles. You know, I basically want to help whatever athlete comes in this room become whatever they want to be in this life.
Did you just say wrestling helps with football tackles? Because I think more football coaches need to hear that more and more. I mean, obviously I preach it all the time, but you know, that's big, you know, and if coaches can realize that.
Ray Lewis is a state champ and it's all double legs and the forms and the matches are all right. But like the guy obviously wanted to play football. And so wrestling, it looked like he utilized the sport of wrestling as if he pictured everybody had a football in their hand when they was wrestling them. And we had a wrestler, Dylan Dubuque. He was coaching at Homer. He was Coach Swordson. But he wrestled for Columbia for Servidone, fourth in the state a couple times, I think maybe even second 1 year. You know, and he told me flat out, I love football more. So I said, all right, you're never going to touch your knee. We're going to just run blast doubles. And, you know, he was honest with me. I was honest with him. I never pushed him to do any tournaments he didn't want to do. And you know, I think he appreciated that. He ended up coaching wrestling in college, and I think in like the Cordica game in the Giants Stadium, he had like 16 tackles, 2 turnovers, and a touchdown. It was some crazy number.
Damn, that's awesome.
He was a special talent at Cortland.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think you just help these kids where they want to go, and they'll be happy.
So, taking a step back to your days of wrestling, and I'm not even your days of wrestling, but your background into freestyle and Greco, of course, you know, most wrestlers start and they get into folk style through the clubs and the high school levels. But, you know, talk about where your love of freestyle and Greco started, you know, the Atwood days, you know, shout out to Jason Bryant for the Fargo Almanac. Looking at it last night and, you know, of course last year as well, you know, you look back at the late 80s the era is, you know, obviously bigger, but I'm looking back at the late 90s and the early 2000s and seeing guys like the Stanglines, Mike Roberts, Dan Bishop, Steve Sutton, Joe Whitaker, Hellwig, E2. You know, you mentioned already Greg Parker and Carl Fraunhofer, but, you know, the guys that have been a part of Joe DiMeo's club and, you know, kind of where probably your love of freestyle and Greco started as well. But talk about that.
Yeah, so DiMeo didn't market it as like – he marketed it as upper body freestyle, right? And – you know, his saying was summer wrestlings make winter champions. And so when I was in the Pee Wee circuit and out of the Pee Wee circuit, my dad was my coach. He was a little tough. He wasn't bad, but I misunderstood his emotions. So I took it as I was disappointing him. Even in wins, he looked like he was upset. And I was like, I don't want to do the sport. So I quit for basketball. And then I come back and, you know, a little later, my brother just started at WA. And I told him I want to come back. He's like, well, I'm not coaching you. You're going to go to Atwa with your brother. And I said, great. I can't let you down then. So I started Atwa, and Sean Sheldon was my brother's partner because Sean Sheldon was a 114 and a half pounder and maybe even 105. My brother was that size as an eighth grader. And so right away, he's wrestling the best guy in the room at Atwa. And he was at SUNY Albany. And so we had Saris. I go to practice and Andy Saris is there. Ike Anderson's there. You know, Jeff Blatnick's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are all world team members, Olympians. And Frank Famiano's in there, and they're teaching us. And we don't, obviously, I think looking back, don't know what you have at the time. Joe DiMeo's just telling us how great everybody is. It was just like, oh, everybody's great. Yeah, he's like, I coach Dave Schultz. We have Dave Schultz autographed posters he's given everybody. And I talked to Nancy Schultz, and she's like, yeah, he was like, I talked to her a couple years ago. She's like, yeah, Joe was like a father figure to Dave. And, you know, realizing now what I had then, but the room was incredible. The top 3 kids in the section of every weight are at WA guys.
Yeah.
there's no other club in the area. And so,
yeah, I mean, those were like the glory days, looking just back at Fargo Almanac and seeing those AWA guys. But yeah, I mean, that's something special to be a part of.
Yeah. And so Carl Fraunhofer, Greg Parker, for me, but looking even later, I think there was a year in 2006, you probably have the Almanac, where they would have taken third as a state. AWA would have, I think they had six finalists and two of the weight class, I believe there was AWA versus AWA in the Greco finals. And, so I think the one weight class, I think you said Roberts, I think Carlo Ferrandino still ended up taking third. So I think they had even three in the top five, if I'm not mistaken. It was insane. And so like the culture, these guys kind of, they came up underneath us, and we just, when we walked down the mat in Greco-Roman, we expected to win. It wasn't, when we wrestled each other, we were nervous. When we wrestled anybody else, it was like, who's going to hit the highest 5-point throw? I'll say that, you know, and I got to develop as a coach even. We were straight lifting and reverse lifting better at that time. Also, the rules were set so that you started with a reverse lift in some of those instances. I mean, the rule changes during that time were putting you in some of these positions. And credit to Joe DiMio to, instead of like whining about rule changes, constantly having his guys ready before anybody else get to wrestle in those rules. And so, that was fantastic.
Yeah. Though, I mean, so when I grew up, you know, Shamrock was the club. So, I mean, like looking forward to Fargo this year, and, you know, I think Scott Green's back on our coaching staff, but, you know, I'm actually excited to be in Fargo this year, sitting, you know, with yourself and Scott Green talking about, you know, the stories of Shamrocks in the 2000s, you know, and Dake and O'Connor and you know, Nickerson and all them that were a part of Shamrock, and, you know, talk about the stories of AWA as well. So that's going to be fun to talk about in a few weeks. But looking at last year, we had Mike Altmer of the Kirby Training Center. He ended Fargo with a big win for Team New York. You know, Junior Greco did solid as well, I think with six All-Americans. But, you know, he's now at Northern Michigan. I also mentioned guys like Charles Dill, Bobby Treshock, Charles Welcome. You know, talk about your time in Northern Michigan, and, you know, not necessarily how you support your guys to go there, but, you know, kind of talk about what's special about Northern Michigan.
Yeah, so, you know, I think basically that school, like, saved me. I was surrounded by winners and people that wanted to be Olympic champions. And so I wasn't used to that. I was used to around people that wanted to rest, do something, and, you know, their sport, and go out and party and stuff. And, you know, when I got to Northern, everybody was like the best of the best. Yvonne brought his six guys from Utah. They were all like multiple time Fargo national champs. You know, you had Lomano, Lawson, Cam Jones, Daryl Spackman, Cheney. All these guys were national champs coming in. Then you had Harry Lester. He's a 2-time world medalist. You know, just everyone around you could kick your butt. And then none of them could touch Yvonne. Yvonne was unbelievable. He was like, he would go through the whole team and like just say, who's next? And, you know, at first we didn't really get him. He's Bulgarian. We thought he doesn't understand Americans. And Joe Betterman and Jake Kirby, guys like that like had huge gains in their first year. They were the type of guys that make you go, hey, we better get on board or like we're going to get skipped. And, the program was amazing. His practice schedule, his periodization, how he had us, got us ready for tournaments, was great. Like we had the Sunkist tournament in the fall. We do a camp going into that. Everybody was like at their best condition going into Sunkist. Same thing with, Bill Farrell. It was the NYC at the time, but every tournament we felt prepared for it. We felt like we were building for something. And then we get to go overseas, and I got to wrestle with Armin Nazarian. You know, my first year there, we get to go to Bulgaria, and I'm wrestling, you know, 3-time Olympic champ. It's like unbelievable. It's, you know, I got to see the world in a way that I wouldn't have got to see. Now, I did go to Oneonta first semester, and that was in 1998. So when I got to Northern Michigan, it was 2002. It was basically a restart button. I went to the Empire State Games. I actually wrestled with Coach Mullen. I'm not talking
Eric,
about
Mr. Chicago.
Yeah. He says he has the video somewhere, so maybe we get it. But he was a freshman at West Virginia coming home, and I went to the Empire State Games. I was staying with Coach Favreau, and then had a great tournament. And Joe DeMeo was like, I can get you a scholarship to Northern Michigan. You wrestle like this. He knew I was like at the crossroads. He called Ike Anderson, and they made some moves, and I got out to Northern. So that kind of gets me how I got into there. But I had an experience wrestling at Oneana, a bunch of guys, very good team that we had. But the Division III college thing for me and the world thing, I don't tell kids where to go for school, but man, that seeing the world was way cooler for me than wrestling. Basically it felt like another year of high school, but just like tougher competition. You know, it's very good schedule colleges. And Greco wasn't. So
yeah, I mean, listening to your experiences, I'm sure as you talk to your wrestlers, you know, and seeing what you did and you know what you're doing, and you know, as that's kind of a turning point of you going to Northern Michigan to then getting into you know, the Kirby Training Center and kind of being able to coach these guys. So that's obviously big. And, you know, that's probably a huge reason that they want to attend there too. And of course their head coach is pretty good too, Coach Andy Bezik. So I mean, they've got something good going out there, Northern Michigan with the Greco program. So looking ahead, you know, kind of to the growth of women's wrestling in New York, you know, we can talk about, and I've talked about the trailblazers of years past, but girls like Christy Davis and Amy Whitbeck, now Amy Golding. But, and, you know, we mentioned, you mentioned already, but the Angie Dills, the Reagan Rattels, Zoe Grass, Emily Frost, you know, what's it like and coaching these girls who are wrestling and being a part of the big movement of, you know, the growth of girls wrestling in New York State, but seeing the growth over, I guess, the last 10 years since the club started. The list goes on for, you know, the top notch girls that you have at your club. But I mean, even just the top notch girls that wrestled in section two, you know, back 20 years ago, you know, what's it like been coaching these girls though? And, you know, just the growth over the years.
Well, so for me, Christy Davis was one of my practice partners, way back in Atwood days. We trained together, you know, sometimes twice, three times a week. And so when I came home, Coach Fraunhofer was in the room at the same time. That was not something that, like, we just said, if you want to wrestle, you wrestle. We weren't looking at whether it was boys or girls. It was just, we knew. And even at Northern Michigan, they had the girls freestyle team there. So it was something that I just grew up with. And it just makes sense to get these girls ready to make world teams as soon as they come in the room. I didn't think about, like, hey, you can make your high school team. You know, I'm like, I can't. I'm like, hey, like, someday you get to make an Olympic team. Now, that being said, I don't talk to the girls about, like, their role in the women's community. I don't. I think it's too much pressure. I think if they naturally just do the things that they do and they love the sport, it'll take care of itself. And they, you know, there's influence to be. You know, if they want that role as a role model, they can have it. If they want to just be able to focus on their craft, they can have it. I don't want to use them as, you know, tools to push, you know, the narrative. Although, like, you know, some people was like, well, that's the inherent responsibility. We just try to teach them how to wrestle, enjoy your sport. And if you love it enough, you'll want to master it. And each one of these girls has a way different style. You know, Zoe Grass and Emily Frost are probably most similar. They're very good 2-on-1 wrestlers. Angie Dill's a counter wrestler. Reagan Rattel wrestles in space, 2-on-1. She's very much a jack of all trades. Zoe Lentz has become very dominant underhooks. And so what my try to do is find where they'll succeed and then just help them do that. Help them, you know, each one of their personalities is different. Each one of their styles is different. And I'm just trying to figure out what makes them tick and then how to get them to do their favorite move better than the person that can counter it. And they've been fantastic. They're unbelievable. I'm not motivated by, like, pushing them to become leaders of the women's sport. I'm just motivated on them, like, again, looking back in 30 years, saying this coach cared. And so they get a very similar – it's a different style to coach, because there's more empathy. I have to lead with empathy with the girls.
Right.
With the boys, and I'm not, I don't like call kids names or try to like negative up, motivate them. But the boys, I can just be very technical, right? Hey, this technically was, this wasn't it. And with the girls, like, you know, empathy, like, is, I found if I lead with empathy first and try to understand what they're going for, then I can teach, I can correct technically. I'm learning that with my own daughter. I don't coach her, but just in life, like, you know, it's just a different, it's just a different mechanism of what to lead with.
Yeah, I mean, and what better to have is, you know, a club too, where these girls can kind of get together, and, you know, obviously they've got male practice partners as well, but a place where they can kind of lean on each other too. But you know, because obviously the during the high school season when they're wrestling against other boys, it can be hard, you know, it can be rough. But for them to have something to look forward to, like going to the Spokane for the women's nationals this year, and, you know, trying to make you know, world teams for, you know, whether it's 15U or you know, cadet, junior, you know, what it might be, but just having that avenue to go down, you know, outside the wrestling season is huge for these girls. But you know, looking back to maybe your top 3 to 5 moments at Fargo, as you know, we're approaching another year of Fargo in 2 weeks. You know, what's your top 3 to 5 moments at Fargo? I mean, these can be for both you and your Kirby guys and girls, or just Team New York in general.
I mean, Team New York is the coaching staff, especially the last few years. Credit to Chris, Eric. You know, the coaches that they're in have always been going day in, day out. You know, the Coach Katanas of the world. Yeah. The probably the match, like, so for me personally, I'm in the corner of a lot of my own guys. And I miss a lot, so I got like the Jesse Williams of the world. They come to camp so that they get to know our guys. We bring quite a bit of kids, and they're going at the same time. But I would say Kevin Parker semifinal against Jelani Ombre, 2016, maybe 2017. I think Ombre was a 1 seed, and Kevin went out and teched him in like under a minute. And it was, I was shook. That was definitely a really big one. Mikey went in his national title last year, absolutely. Mikey's been in a lot of tough situations where he's taken second, and he's had expectations of taking first. And we have to have those tough conversations, like, hey, man, like, it's a blessing. Like, you still get up every day, and it's just something for you to learn. You're still really young, like, don't put all your eggs in this basket. But watching him win and just letting him just exhaust emotions brought a couple of tears to my eyes. So that was great.
You know, Mike's championship, or his win last year, you know, on the big stage at Fargo was awesome. You know, I mean, it pumped me up. Just I kind of probably was in every time that he was coming up to the mat, I was like, all right, I got to go to this mat, because I know there's going to be some air mileage going on for you know, Mike's giving out. So, you know, he obviously had a great year last year, and it was fun to watch, you know, seeing New York win another national title in Greco.
Yeah, I'd say anytime a kid makes an All-American and the tears come out of their eyes, there's all of, like, every girl that we've had do that, they just cry on the mat. The guys saying, like, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, I did it. It's the title, you know, a lot of them want national titles, some just want to be on the podium. But we've witnessed a few now, and like, they always shake me. So like, there's not one that's better than the other. If you break me mentally and you get me to like cry, like, it's truly one of the best moments that I could see. Now, one that I really love, just like, that had nothing to do with our kids, last year when Moncherry was on the stage and just body locked. I don't know where the kid was from, but having Tim Pescatore, you know, Moncherry's coaches aren't, you know, he's meeting coaches on the camp, and he meets Tim Pescatore, and they go through the battle together. And, you know, just seeing that, you know, from the coaches, just really enjoying the kids. Like, you know, the kid was kind of learning Greco on the fly. That same thing happened with Joey Slackman too. He didn't even think, I'll just do Greco, whatever. And he learned a body lock in his first match. And then he just body, he got the most pins in the least amount of times, least amount of time. And he really didn't belong to any, but there wasn't a club coach there. Like these situations, like the whole thing, like there's going to be two or three kids that we weren't sure that we're going to do it, that just came into rec shop. And those are always fun too. That's kind of like gets everybody really amped up.
Yeah, last year was really special. I mean, I just shared that Moncherry one on Instagram. You know, I getting the people pumped back up for Fargo and some Moncherry bombs. But, you know, looking back at last year, junior men's freestyle, we had two All-Americans. Junior Greco, we had six. You know, we ended with Junior Greco, and that was big. That was a great note to end on. You know, 16U men's freestyle, we had three All-Americans, and then junior girls freestyle, we had three, and 16U girls freestyle, we had three All-Americans as well. So, you know, looking to add to those totals as last year, but you know, we had a pretty good year last year. Looking for more All-Americans and hopefully some bigger stop signs this year as well.
Yeah, I think we have a great team. I think that the cadets numbers struggle because, you know, in the pandemic we lost some schoolboy years, and New York really wasn't allowed to wrestle. Like, you had to go to PA to wrestle.
True.
And a lot of parents put their kids in spring sports just to get them outside because the rules were just really tough here. And that's great. That's like the smart thing to do. Put your kids outside somewhere. You know, wrestling wasn't allowed. I think our Headlocks on the Hudson was the first tournament post pandemic in New York State, which is 2021. That's a year and a half later. That's your schoolboys that didn't get to wrestle that all of a sudden are wrestling at cadets. And so you see that this state suffered. I think you'll see a rebound. Our schoolboy team this year was great. You know, they have great chemistry. They're going to grow together. And I think, you know, when they're cadets and juniors, you're going to see those numbers go back up. Our juniors this year will do well. I think our cadets will do well this year. They had another year to adjust. But I look at like a Tyler Ferrara, a kid that was blood rounding Greco, that just gave Greco a shot. But yeah, he's highly influential to the entire state.
Agreed.
Everybody likes this kid. His brother is just at this camp, and he loves Greco. Where did he get that from? His brother.
And we all sat at Buffalo Wild Wings last year, and we kind of said, hey, listen, man, you got to stay for Fargo. You got to stay in Fargo for a little bit longer. You know, this could be your last year before you go to Cornell. And you got to wrestle Greco. And, of course, that made, you know, stood big with a lot of wrestlers, I think, in New York, just seeing that, you know, Tyler jumped into Greco, didn't have to. And, you know, obviously he won quite a bit of matches doing so.
And he did it in his plan, his method. You don't have to throw. You can hit arm drags. You can hit ducks. You can hit front headlocks. You can hit all your folk style moves. If you have a gut wrench, probably going to make it easier. If you have a tilt, right? It's the same thing. You can just, you get behind somebody and score on them.
But yeah, no. Yeah. So Tyler Ferrara was, you know, he was big, like wrestling Greco last year. You know, I think I put a poll on when we were actually at Buffalo Wild Wings saying, you know, should Tyler wrestle Greco? And again, we don't know if this is his last year in, you know, Fargo. And like you mentioned, you don't know if you have that opportunity to go to Fargo. Like, if you have that opportunity to go to Fargo, jump on it and do it. If you're there for freestyle, you should probably wrestle Greco as well, you know? So I'm glad that he did that. And, you know, hopefully more kids kind of look at that and say, hey, you know, I could do the same thing. You know, you don't have to have those spectacular throws. He you know, obviously won a lot of matches on that arm drag. So,
yep. And he said he liked it. That wasn't even, he didn't just do it. And that was, he said, I enjoyed that turn. Like, Greco's fun. But yeah, you know, the thing about the injury too, forget the injury. We had 800 kids wrestle at our state tournament this year. People want to go to Fargo, and it's not because the coaches are telling you how good of a tournament it is. It's because your teammates and your peers, you know, we go to the high school state championships and all these guys are like hanging out and they're talking about Fargo. Cause that's the last time they saw each other, the high school state championship. Hey, what's up, man? I haven't seen you since, you know, and you know, there is this, like, I want to go to that. Like, what is this? Like, I want to go to that. And so I think, you know, collectively from, the board, the Chris is the world, the Mullins, you, everybody that's at these meetings, that's trying to create this consistency in this environment, to the wrestlers that go and lay it on the line and trust us. This was one of our biggest state tournaments we ever had. And so now it's not just like show up and qualify. Like, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it used to, you know, when wrestling was almost dead, they were changing the rules and save Olympic wrestling. I mean, there was like 8 kids in the tournament. You know, you win a match, you're qualified. Like, at this point, you have to be serious about wrestling freestyle and Greco to qualify. So there's just no, there's nothing given. You qualify, you really earned it. You should go. And so,
Yeah, and it just makes it competitive for us, you know, as a state. Like, hey, now you have to actually train and compete a little bit more for freestyle and Greco than just going to your state tournament or, you know, a qualifying tournament before the state tournament. So, you know, I like it. You know, it's going to help us as a state grow.
yep. So kudos to those guys, like the Ferraris of the world, giving it a shot. So I'm really grateful for him. We've talked about it since. He hasn't realized the impact he had, but he has had a lot.
Yeah, I agree. So again, we're a week away from, or you know, a couple days away from your next week of camp, you know, preparing again for Fargo the second week. What do you have lined up for this week at camp? I mean, last week you brought in, I'm not even going to pronounce the name of the girl or try to pronounce it, but the Nigerian wrestler came over, and you know, I don't know if she was there for one day or 2 days, but you know, it was awesome to have her you know, showing stuff at camp. But what do you have lined up for this week at camp?
I believe Richie Manning is supposed to be coming in for a day. You know, yeah, again, Shamrock, you're talking Shamrock, Scott Greentree, Jesse Williams being there. But we have Mark Yanagihara, and he's a front headlock specialist, U.S. national champ. Trash Talk's been in all last week. He'll be in this week. I'm trying to get Kevin Maxwell in because I really do love having a rules clinician come in and really talk to these guys about what they're going to call.
Yeah.
I really think the push out one, caution one is going to be something they call very heavily. And so kids wrestling the edge is going to get them in trouble. We're going to have kids throw to their own back if they're not understanding that, hey, like you need to dominate the middle. And we've already been doing that drill wise. We've just been having them, you know, instead of wrestling back to the edge, back to the center. And I've been telling them why, but hearing it from an official, that'll always be big. We have more clinicians coming in. I should have
Yeah.
them on the top, but we have
Either
Lewis
way,
Finley.
that.
So, and then like, you know, we do the hill, we do the stair jumps. I like doing those things again. We do dummy throws and Bulgarian bags. I like doing them again in week two because they can feel they're like now they're attacking it instead of laboring through it. Week two, they start going, oh, wait, I feel stronger. I feel faster. I feel this. 4th of July, we're probably going to end the last practice early. We're going to take them to one of our wrestlers' houses. They're having like a 45-minute firework display. The kids that are staying here, I had 30 kids stay here. So.
Wow.
Yeah, we have kids from Buffalo, Long Island, kids from Long Beach were here. The North Tonawanda kids were here. The Pit Crew kids were here. They were here from all over. So we're trying to also provide an experience for them as well. So, you know, we don't want them dreaming about their 4th of July. That feels like a sacrifice. I don't want training camp to ever feel like a sacrifice. It naturally is, but we have to have fun too. So we'll do something for 4th of July, and then you know, we're gonna finish strong. We had a grind match too. You weren't there for that, but you had a 60-minute match, no timeouts, no out of bounds, one partner. This week we're gonna do 2 30-minute ones where you'll have two goes. Same rules, 30 minutes, no out of bounds. And then we have a match day built in there. So they get a lot of live.
Yeah, man, that's all fun stuff too. I mean, like you mentioned, wrestlers from across the state are, you know, going there to train and, you know, help each other out to get better for Fargo. And of course, it's another bonding thing before they go to Fargo. So when you go, don't go to, or when you go to Fargo and you're on Team New York with another New York person that you have no idea who they are because they're from another part of the state. You know, obviously, building that you know, bond before you actually get to Fargo is going to be special because you're going to be spending days, multiple days out there in Fargo with, you know, other New York wrestlers. So it's great that they get it at these camps. So again, we have camp coming up at Kirby next week, July 6th through the 8th. We have a girls camp at Nassau Community College. Shout out to Teddy. And then July 13th and 14th, which the girls will be already on their way or already checked into Fargo at this point. But Spartan Combat RTC at Friedman Center at Cornell. There will be, assuming it's the last few days for the boys to, you know, prepare for Fargo before they either fly or drive out, whatever they're doing. But, you know, how many Kirby kids, without looking at the roster, I haven't got that yet from Jen, but, you know, how many Kirby kids are headed to Fargo this year that you know of?
About 30.
Wow, that's impressive.
About a dozen girls, 18 to 20 boys. I know we qualified like 22, but I think, you know, I think there's a couple that aren't going. So, yeah, no, it's – that's another reason why this camp exists. You know, there's so many kids. We would like to – and I, this is my full-time job. So during the week, a lot of coaches can't run camps because they're also working elsewhere.
Right.
So weekend camps are great because if you have, it's all you have to have something. And, but having them go, be able to go consistently through the week, then have these weekend camps that they want, man, they really are getting intense training. They're getting the camps that they need. After this week, our kids will practice maybe once a day, but they're not, they're going to start acclimating. They're going to start, you know, thinking about their weight, they're going to like recover so that when we get on the mat at Fargo, they're being unleashed, like basically out of it. Like they're fully recovered or mostly recovered. And they're like, they're in shape and their mind is right. And they're like, oh man, I just survived camp. You're in trouble. Like you're, I'm going to get you. So this is the last of our intensity, high intensity. They're obviously, there's a practice or two out there to acclimate to the Fargo air, but no, there's a method to all this. You know, I think we'll be out for the girls. Most of the coaches in the state will already be out there for the girls because they also coach the girls. You know, so the boys will, you know, some of them are driving out, but some coaches, you know, there's going to be more probably US, New York USA coaches out there for the girls already getting ready to coach.
Yep. Yeah, I leave. I think I leave the 12th. Adams and I are heading out on the 12th. So, looking forward to another drive to Fargo. So, no, talking about the grind of Fargo, though. I mean, again, it's 7 to 10 days that you're out there. You know, how do you survive the Fargo grind? And do you have a C4 sponsorship yet?
Well, I'm actually moved over to the Fast Twitch. Well, I had a C4 sponsorship, but then Amazon bought them.
Okay.
So now I've been drinking these guys. And but no, it's like I have 3 200 milligram caffeine drinks a day. I first thing in the morning, I try to get to sleep, you know, 11 o'clock, unless I'm like arguing with like Guthrie over wrestling stuff till like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's you have to be in a rhythm too for your kids, and a routine, because your energy. You know, there was a match last year. For me, it's probably my most famous match. I threw the brick 6 times. And I won every one of them. It was Owen Hicks' quarterfinal match against Alabama.
I was in the corner for that, yeah. Or I was mat side for that.
It was a 40-minute match. But, like, you, that comes when you also have the same energy that you expect of your athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You have to be, you
100%.
Know, it's our job as coaches to advocate for every single point within the rules the way we're supposed to. And we ask them to raise $2,000. We have to raise our energy levels. And so our coaches are expected to know the rules better than our opponents. I mean, I think we do. I think we have some super knowledgeable coaches that know the rules, that understand, that win challenges. And I think that helps the athlete then go out and even fight harder. Because they know that the team that they have together will do whatever it takes. And so, you know, my routine is a good night's sleep. If I need to get a nap in there in between sessions, I think it'll be easier for me this time, because last time when they gave you breaks, most people got to take them. We had girls in the All-American rounds. So, like, a break is – you're going right to the finals of another, right? And then, like – so there's probably, like, the last 3 years – for the first 7 days, I didn't see any light of day outside until like 5-6 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you don't see sunlight. Sometimes you go 3 damn days without seeing sunlight. So, you know, I think Casey's coffee for me is my go-to when I'm in Fargo for the last 2 years. good Fargo pick me up and get you ready for the day inside the Fargo Dome for sure.
No, yeah. And I'm going to go to the Casey's to get like probably like 3 or 4 cases of my drinks. So it's just ready waiting for me in the room. So yeah, you have to like get set up as soon as you get out there. You're like, all right, these are the things I need. And then you go and you handle the coaching duties. And so, you know, probably the hardest part is like the kids coming in trying to change rooms before you get them situated.
Yeah, so, you'll always have that. Yeah.
If we beat that. So if we're all there, and I think we are because the girls will be there, we can get ahead of the things and we just start on a really good leg. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, obviously, Fargo's a special time. You know, whether you're connecting with coaches from, you know, across the state that you haven't seen in a few weeks, but, it's also seeing guys from last year, you know, guys from, you know, Jason Bryant. Like, I mean, we stopped at Jason Bryant's house last year, you know, the voice of, you know, national, the Division I wrestling tournament, the world, the championships, the Olympics, you know, he's a PA announcer for those events, but, just running into these people in the wrestling world. The wrestling world's a special community to be a part of, you know, whether you're just, you know, New York or coaches or, you know, you got coaches and friends from all around the country. And it's fun to kind of connect out in Fargo and, you know, watch these wrestlers, you know, finally, you know, step on the big stage and, you know, go after what they're looking forward to, you know, those stop signs. So yeah, I'm looking forward to another year in Fargo, but, winding this down, where can we find you and more about Kirby Training Center?
You know, my website probably, I have such help. I have like Jimmy Sutton helping me, make sure because my thing is like, you guys know, everyone knows where to find me. Just show up at my place. I live here every day. It's my only job. But like Instagram's probably the thing I upkeep the most. You know, we share a lot of technique videos. It's at coach_Joe_Uselini. But KirbyTrainingCenter.com is our website. And we have a lot of photos of what our kids have done. So we've got a practice schedule. But ultimately, you know, I'm here every day. So if people really want to find me, that's where they end up. Hey, you know, I was trying to get a hold of you. I decided to come down. And, you know, I'm pretty easy to find. You know, this is what I do all the time. There's no other job.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of jealous of that. You know, obviously you do a very good job of doing the Kirby Training Center and, you know, being a coach and whatnot, but just being on the mats and being involved with coaching and, you know, bettering 200 plus wrestlers' lives that come to Kirby Training Center, it's definitely better than being at, you know, my work. So
And we're lucky. We have some good clubs in the area. Right. And so sometimes what you want to serve, some kids like, you know, I cannot do great. I'm not doing great. Right. And it's like, there's other clubs. Right. And so there's no way I can put egos aside. There's no way I can service every kid in the section. True. Nor would I want to, because then it's watered down and you can't help everybody at the level that they need. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough resources. So just being understanding of the amount of kids, the amount of talent in the area, and keep it in perspective of what your goal is. We can build a culture of kids that, like, you know, fit inside what we do, and other clubs can do the same, and we can have a bunch of success, which Section 2 did have this year. I think they were top 3 in both divisions in high school. And that's ultimately the goal. Summer wrestling makes winter champions. You know, and for second, I think it's I don't know when the last time Section 2 both divisions was top 3, but they're doing a very good job.
Yeah, I mean, Section 2 definitely did have a great year. I know Zach and I talked about it in our recap show, but you know, that all leads to the success of, you know, the clubs in Section 2 and you know, what you guys are doing, and obviously it hasn't gone on notice. So you know, keep up good work. You got any last words before we end this podcast?
No, I just really appreciate the time and the interest in what we're doing, or what the kids, you know, you see the kids and you see their energy. It's all them, you know. We deal with the losses on our end and the adjustments that we have to make coaching, but these kids are the reason why that Kirby, his name is going in the direction we want it. So all these kids that laid on the line, that sacrificed their summers, that you know, trust us to go to the events that they, you know, to take the directions that we give them. You know, it's all you guys that have created this. So, and thank you. And the volunteer people too, you know, the people that like see a vision of what the kids are doing and then lend their time. You know, this is what makes this sport great. And just, you know, finding solutions. That's what wrestlers do. Don't complain about problems. And this sport's probably, to me, the 90s were the golden era of USA Wrestling. I think we're in the next golden era now, from our senior level all the way down to our youth. I think we're there again. I think these kids will end up becoming great coaches when they're like my age, because of the, you know, when you grow up in the golden era, Chris and I, Mullen, all these guys, we're all part of the same era. That's why I think we're so passionate about bringing it forward. And so I love where we're at. I love where we're going. And so, you know, I can't wait to see you guys next week or 2 weeks. And I think we're going to have a better year than we did this year. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in Fargo as well. Good luck to everybody that's, you know, listening to this, whether you're coach or you're, you know, training in the last week or two of your training camp before Fargo. You know, good luck. Go Team New York and peace out.
All right. See you, man.